Well, orthopaedic surgery everywhere is a bloke's game, but nowhere more than Australia, where only 4% of women work as orthopaedic surgeons. And the barriers to being admitted into the specialty are great, as Dr. Joan Arakal found when she arrived in Australia from India, keen to pursue her career. I asked Joan why she chose orthopaedics in the first place.
The fact that there weren't many men did not actually come to my notice, surprisingly, because you're driven by a passion for something. And so you want to do hand surgery, and orthopedics is a means to attain that. Orthopedics is fun. Orthopedics is gratifying. I'm somebody who likes to work with my hands. So all these factors were the ones that basically led me to choosing orthopedics. And the gender issue was a non-issue, as a matter of fact, at the time of my choice.
Yes. Particularly in India, where, interestingly, you say it's more about education than it is about gender, once women can get themselves off the sticky floor of not being educated.
Correct, yes. Yeah. So, you know, the kind of so-called sexism that we see are somewhat different in nations that are developing, because their sexism is mostly driven by poverty. And women are the sufferers of the deprivation of poverty, disproportionately so. So, yes, women are mired on a sticky floor, which entails low literacy rates, poverty, and abuses of various sorts, including lack of sanitation, etc. But once they're priced off the sticky floor and there are no economic constraints, then you find that they can actually rise quite high. And the issue of their gender is less so. So I like to think of it this way, that the sticky floor is more of an issue in nations that are not as economically advanced, while the glass ceiling is more of an issue in developed nations where economic constraints are not present.
You were certainly made aware of that when you came to Australia. Now, you've described the orthopaedics world in Australia in a few ways, but the ones that interest me are a boys' club, but also like a medieval guild. Can you tell me what your first impressions were?
Yes, I was somewhat taken aback when I first made foray into this, coming from England and wanting to explore the, you know, how to take my career forward. And my first meeting with a very senior person on the who would have something to say about how your career would proceed. And his first almost opening lines were, "Don't they need orthopedic surgeons like you in your country?" And basically directed me to a place where they would need gender practitioners. So he was essentially telling me, you know, you're not welcome. And that initially I thought was just an aberration, because the enormity of his approach was so incredulous that you could not even take it seriously. I did encounter a few orthopedic surgeons who were quite encouraging and who, you know, directed me in some fashion or the other. But I must say, the people who sit in these positions of, you know, who are basically can see it for what it is, are the minority, and they do not have a voice that's significant enough to make a difference, because it's being run like a guild. And so, as you would know, guild members, the senior members in the guild, are the ones who are powerful. And naturally, they draw the rules, and you have to stick to them. There is almost a cartel-like feeling to it. If you do not toe the line, you will be pretty much decimated.
I've heard the orthopaedics ward described by doctors as being a bit like a carpentry shop, and it's a lot about power saws, and it has a kind of macho feel, I would imagine. Is that what's going on there in the disinclination to get women involved?
Yes, there is a lot of use of power tools and carpentry-like procedures going on within the thing. Orthopaedics, they, not all of them, but many of them visualize orthopaedics as a trade. Again, so they've taken it away. The science has been removed from the speciality. Orthopedics is really a scientific speciality, and because they do not have competition, because of the way they work in the guild-like fashion, they do not have competition, and so they dictate what can be done. So there is no need to improve the quality. So mediocrity is fostered, and science is a casualty of this. So you'll find very little scientific progress within orthopedics itself. And so, yes, it is run like a trade, and, you know, it's almost like people swaying their hammers and their attitudes and they're walking around strutting the corridors of the theatres. Let me tell you an example. For example, I'm doing some work in fracture research, fracture healing, and the work's been well received in other circles. And I presented this to a very senior surgeon in Perth, basically saying how, you know, with some calculations done on digital X-rays, you could actually possibly avoid surgery in certain situations. His response to that was rather amusing and gobsmacking, I must say. What he said was, oh, that's a bloody waste of time. I'll just bang a nail in. So banging a nail in essentially means you're probably doing, potentially doing an unnecessary procedure for which you're getting very well remunerated. And that's the other thing with orthopedics, you know, you get big money for small procedures.
You say in your book that, you know, it's in a way it's like a guild that's condoned and it's a guild for profit. How does that profit work within it? How are they making money apart from being surgeons?
Yeah, that again boils down to the main problem that's pertaining to orthopedics itself, which is basically that it acts as a monopoly. The Royal College, of which we have only one, Royal College of Surgeons, acts as a monopoly, and they have subcontracted their work to the Australian Orthopaedic Association. And they in turn decide how many people, how many trainees can come into practice orthopaedics. And so the number of surgeons that's actually released into the society is somewhat mismatched. So you don't have as many surgeons as you need for the public that it needs to be served. And this mismatch obviously means you have less competition. And so, you know, it's basically putting it very simply, the supply and demand is not proportionate. So the people who stand to gain is the suppliers who, you know, can actually demand quite high fees for their services. So they also run down the Medicare system, because if you go into the Medicare or into the public hospital, which is basically what we are paying as taxes, and that's why we have such excellent Medicare facility in Australia, you find in orthopedics, if you're not going in with acute trauma, you're waiting on very long waiting lists. You go into private health, you end up paying, apart from what the surgeons get in terms of generous Medicare remuneration and the private insurers giving the insurance companies giving them the remuneration, they charge a gap on top of that. And this gap is something that the public has no control over, you see. So they just basically have to dish it out. So we are dishing out extortionate prices for mediocre service, all boiling down to the fact that this is being prosecuted as a monopoly.
Joan Arakal, she's really got an axe to grind against the orthopaedic community, and her book Slice Girls is a great story of life as a female surgeon and her fight to be admitted to what she says is a boys' club. It's published by Impact Press.